Europe comes down hard on Iran. What are the risks?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Adrienne Hill. We start this morning in Europe, where the EU has formally adopted an oil embargo against Iran. The embargo applies immediately to new oil deals and allows existing contracts to run till July. The sanctions are one in a series against the country over its nuclear program. For more, we go now to Jonathan Marcus. He's the BBC diplomatic correspondent in London. Good morning.
Good morning.
So there are already American sanctions, international sanctions. What's new with these?
Well, what's crucial about these is that the Americans have tried to constrain Iran's oil industry, but of course America itself doesn't buy oil from Iran. The Europeans do. Some European countries are heavily dependent upon Iranian oil. Greece buys about a third of its imported oil from Tehran. Italy and Spain buy a little over 10% of their oil from the Iranians. So cuts here will have a significant impact on Iran's economy.
Now, you just mentioned Greece and Italy. We know they're in some economic trouble. Could this sanction end up hurting them as well?
Well, potentially it could, and I think that's why the European Union has decided to phase in the sanctions. There will be no new contracts with the Iranians from now on, but existing contracts will continue to run until July. And I think this phased approach towards the sanctions is clearly intended to allow countries like Greece, Italy and Spain, which you rightly say are amongst the weaker elements of the European Union at the moment, to get alternative supplies elsewhere. Of course, nobody wants to see an oil crisis, which on the one hand would greatly complicate Europe's economic difficulties and all of the problems around the euro and so on. But equally, a significant increase in the oil price would paradoxically, of course, benefit Iran as well.
Jonathan Marcus is the BBC's diplomatic correspondent in London. Thanks so much.
Great pleasure.
Now to one of the sweetest news stories of the day, or maybe bittersweet or semi-sweet, chocolate. Turns out the price of cocoa has started to fall. From London, Christopher Worth explains why.
Karsten Fritsch is a commodities analyst for Commerzbank. He watches the cocoa markets closely, and he enjoys his work.
Yes, I like eating chocolate.
But lately, fewer chocolate lovers are buying sweets, and there's a very simple reason for that. Demand for cocoa, the main ingredient in chocolate, has dropped across the world as the global downturn drags on. And Fritsch says with less demand, the price of cocoa has plunged.
So there's a visible effect of the economic crisis on cocoa demand. But I think that the main driver is the supply situation.
That is, the supply of cocoa that's grown around the world. Growers had expected a surplus of cocoa this year, but dry, dusty winds out of the Sahara now threaten crops in West Africa, the world's largest region for production, a scenario that could send cocoa prices right back up again and keep chocolate lovers away too. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Now, let's do the numbers. U.S. markets are up this morning. The Nasdaq is up 0.4%. The S&P is up 0.3%. The Dow is up 19 points at 12,739.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Invest Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland, a European location offering a workforce that's well-educated, smart, and driven. More at investni.com/invest. And by GoToMeeting by Citrix, bringing high-definition video conferencing to online meetings for face-to-face collaboration. More at GoToMeeting.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Musicians, record producers, and music teachers gathered this weekend at the National Association of Music Merchants, or NAMM, trade show. You'd think a convention featuring musical instruments would be pretty controversy-free. I mean, they're instruments. But as Marketplace's Eve Tro reports, some guitars have created a bit of an environmental hubbub.
In the Martin guitar booth at the NAMM trade show, players reverently picked up the instruments on display. Some cost tens of thousands of dollars. What makes them so precious? Often the wood. Much of it's rare or endangered.
That's mahogany. That's ebony.
George Gruen runs Gruen Guitars in Nashville.
Each wood has its own sound and its own function in the guitar.
And each kind of wood has to be listed, genus, species, and country of origin, if you want to export that guitar. That's been the rule since 2008, part of the Lacey Act to curb trade in endangered trees. Gruen says dealers like him are nervous about that law these days because last year the federal government raided Gibson guitars and seized pallets full of rosewood and ebony of questionable origin. Ann Middleton is with the Environmental Investigative Agency. Her group tracked that wood from Madagascar.
The fact that when it crossed U.S. borders happened to be in the hands of Gibson guitars was out of our control. We did not target the music industry.
Nevertheless, some music makers feel attacked. Their trade group, NAMM, is now lobbying to rework the law.
Not to create any special rules, just to see clarity.
Mary Lewerson directs government policy for NAMM. She says other industries like paper, furniture, and flooring import much more wood than instrument makers.
And I think the fear is really around other interests piling onto our legislative fix.
Environmental groups say NAMM's efforts to make exceptions could open the door for other industries to skirt the law. Madagascar-born musician Razia Saeed sang outside the NAMM show in protest. She says only strict trade laws can protect forests in her home country because the Madagascar government is in chaos.
People cutting wood from national parks. Just imagine if people would go to Yellowstone and just cut some trees.
She says even if the music industry is not the main culprit, it should do all it can to set a good example. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
And finally, forget the pass note in the hallway or the text message. According to the LA Times, there's a blossoming trend among teenagers to ask each other out in creative and sometimes expensive ways. They've got a lot of examples: hand-knitted scarves, choreographed dances, and my favorite, a pet turtle delivered with the note, "Will you go to prom with me?" In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
In the Philippines, the link between religion, birth control, and global hunger becomes pretty clear.
There will be doubling of the population, there will be overcrowding of people, there will be a survival of the fittest.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Our series, Food for 9 Billion, continues. That and the numbers from Wall Street as well, next time on Marketplace. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.